Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here yet on another episode as we keep moving forward into this new year of 2023. I believe this episode will be airing here in February. So way to go, people, surviving that first winter month here. But what I also always am grateful for is that you're joining us for this episode and ones in the past. If you missed them, they are all available on Spotify and anywhere else you can pretty much find podcasts. A lot of great episodes there. You can go in the Wayback Machine, like I've heard some people do in the first early episodes, and see the evolution of the show, so to speak. It's always been interesting. But throughout the next year here, we are excited to still bring you two episodes, one being our long-form episode, getting to know people within the community of the FSHD Society, as well as outside of just the organization, and those that have FSHD or caregivers and doctors and so forth, to kind of bring their story to the forefront, and we can kind of, you know, pick their brains a little bit and understand their perspective. And one of those people in this episode is with us today. He is a person that has FSHD. He is someone similar to myself, where he loves talking through a microphone and has a great background and history in that. And his name is Paul Ronson. Paul, hi. How are you doing?
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, it took us a while for you and I to connect. A lot of it's on me, timing and whatnot. So this is great to finally get it together.
Absolutely. Yeah. COVID got in the way.
It did. You know, doggone it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
but it's great to be able to do things at long last.
And Paul, where are you? Okay. Everybody's right away, right? The first words that came out of your mouth, like, wait a minute, Paul's not from the United States. So where are you calling us from?
I'm calling you from a village in Suffolk, in East Anglia, which is the far bottom right-hand corner, not quite Kent, but okay, just above the Thames estuary, in 14th century origin Suffolk.
Wow. Everybody get that? Get your maps out. Get your atlases out. That is amazing. So
this is real England. I'm surrounded by 14th and 15th century thatched buildings that have daub on the walls and beautiful oak beams.
That's amazing. You're like living within the history of your country. So you probably laugh at people of the U.S. where they're like, oh yeah, we have all this great architecture and old things. It's like just about 100 years old or whatnot, right? It's like, what?
Well, you guys would know that Harry Potter, some of the Harry Potter will know that some of the scenes were filmed here in Suffolk in a place called Lavenham.
Did you go to those places when it was being filmed or no?
Lavenham last week. You'll like this now, having a beautiful afternoon English tea.
Oh man, that's perfect. that is perfect.
Yeah.
So you're kind of living the great life as we'd all would anticipate having. Is it an afternoon tea? Is that?
Yeah. Okay. Afternoon tea, quintessentially English. You have jasmine or Earl Grey tea, and you have trays on a stand, and you have beautiful cakes on the top. In the center, you have scones with cream and jam, and
wow,
then some savory things. So it takes you a while to get through.
Oh my gosh. And you have that in the middle of the day. That's great. That's great. People are like, what are these two talking about? Yeah, we're talking about baked goods, people. That's like my thing. Like, I don't really drink alcohol. I don't do a lot of that. But man, if you put something like you just described in front of me, it is going to be devoured.
It is, as they would say in a very exclusive English accent, it is the only way to spend the afternoon.
So no, Paul, but that's not the reason why that you're totally here for us, just to give us that England experience. It's more about the fact that you're a person that has FSHD. You wanted to share your story, your perspective of coping, dealing with the disease, kind of transitioning your life a little bit with career. So kind of take us back to maybe how I like to start a lot of stories with people that have this disease is kind of your FSHD story. You know, when did you first feel the signs? When were you diagnosed? Those kind of points.
Okay. When I was at school as a youngster in the north of England, I was a soccer player and destined to become a pro soccer player. I was absolutely obsessed with football, soccer, as you guys call it.
Yes.
I was very, very fortunate as a youngster from school to be taken on as an associate schoolboy by Manchester United.
Wow.
Who you guys will probably know there for sure, with the Glazer family who own the club.
Yes.
And I was 15 years old and training there, and I had to have a cartilage operation on my left knee. And back then, you know, surgery's moved on so much, it's all keyhole stuff now. But they immobilized you in a pressure bandage for 2 weeks in a hospital after they wrench your kneecap off to repair the cartilage. And they told me that the left leg would atrophize. And sure enough, it did. But also the whole left-hand side of my body atrophized as well. My arm, my shoulder, the trapezius muscle on the left-hand side. So I got out of bed after 2 weeks completely lopsided. So you're talking then, what, about 85, something like that, I think that was. And earlier, 75, something like that. Okay. So research back then was nothing like it is now. And they thought they'd hit a nerve in my shoulder, because when they put you out for the operations, they didn't put a tap in your hand then. They actually injected you in your arm. And anyway, they couldn't understand what had gone on, but they got me back training again. The leg came back, but the trapezius muscle never did on the left-hand side. So it was kind of odd.
Yeah.
And because of that, then my playing wasn't the same. I was kind of conscious of a weakness. And anyway, long story forward, I went into advertising initially as a first job, if you like, paid job.
Yeah.
And I was playing in a five-a-side team, and my right ankle came out of joint.
What?
So, really
terrible.
Running along with the ball, and then, poof, you know, nothing there.
Yeah.
So they rushed me straight in back in again, and this orthopedic guy looked at my ankle and said, "It's a bit strange, this, because the muscles that support your ankle aren't what they should be. I need you to meet a neuro guy." And again, you know, you're talking about way, way back. So neuro was kind of in its early stages, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Discovery. But fortunately, through the football club, I got in with a very eminent guy. And he basically took a biopsy from my left leg. Quite a long, I mean, even now, 40-odd years later, 50 years later, it's still quite sore.
Really?
Yeah. It took a great piece out of me, and so you had to grow it to understand what this thing was.
Yeah.
I was only supposed to be in the hospital for 3 days, but I ended up being there for 3 weeks. And of course, they had to get me up and start me moving again, because, you know, if you're in bed for long periods, the atrophy begins, the weakness starts. Anyway, he came to the end of the bed and said to me, I think you've got something called spinal muscular atrophy type 2. But with what I'm terming as FSH tendencies, because we don't know a lot about this FSH yet, but I'm sort of beginning to understand it more. So I went out of that hospital, and he kind of looked at me, because I'd been this hyper fit sportsman, and my face dropped when he told me what this was, because I said to him, what's the long-term news on this?
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of said, well, by the time you get to 45, you may struggle to walk unaided.
Mm-hmm.
And started making predictions like that to me, but you should be able to lead a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And you're mega fit anyway. You can get back to fitness. And what I recommend you to do, Paul, is from now on until that age, do everything you possibly can while you're mobile.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, basically. I kind of, you know, went off into this career.
Yeah.
I did some time on commercial radio, which was a local commercial station, which was absolutely superb. I'd done it as an amateur on what they term as a hospital broadcasting network here in the UK, and then did that. And then I went back into advertising again, and funnily enough, into international pharmaceutical marketing.
Jeez.
I went round the world three times in seven-star luxury with drug companies like Squibb and Merck Home and some of these big guys, taking their new discoveries to international congresses.
Wow.
Which for me, with this, was an absolute eye-opener, because I went to congresses right at the sharp edge of every type of subject you can think of: cardiology, psychiatry, rheumatology, you know, could ream them off in these wonderful locations, and got to see the world. I got out of that because I used my advertising production background, because I used to understand print and how it was all put together, artwork, typesetting, the whole processes. And with a group of guys from the screen print industry and the professional photo lab industry, we put together the UK's first ever large format digital printing company in London in 1993. So we got a bit of software from the States that operated wide format plotters and converted files to CMYK. And we witnessed something like 700% growth per annum in 3 years, which is kind of off the scale. I became the director of sales of it, this business. And we built up a big profile of billboard customers, national billboard companies, where we could print maybe one or five posters for them in a few hours, whereas conventionally it had taken 4 weeks. And some retailers, I started to talk with them and say, your point of sale is actually going to become screens in the future.
Yeah.
They're kind of looking at me, but I said, in the interim, I can do you 20 posters for the store really quick.
Yeah.
But stick with me and I'll help you through this whole digital process.
Yeah.
And then we ended up with five locations around the UK doing the print. And I always used to say to the chairman of the business, who was a guy who was in the Sunday Times top 100 of wealthy individuals in the UK, there'll be a window of opportunity with this print. And when a guy puts an inkjet printer in his bedroom and starts to print with no overhead, that's the time we begin to move out of it. Yeah. And this wealthy guy was saying to me, well, hi, Paul, great, but what's next?
Yeah.
And that's when I said, well, over in the US again, I've seen some great software that effectively it drives the head end of cable TV networks. And here in the UK, we had Sky TV, where they'd originally shown a piece of video in a window on a screen with a ticker tape rolling at the bottom and some text. So this software that I'd found was a little bit like PowerPoint, where you compose slides, but this could actually let you put a piece of video into a slide and then make a transition smoothly, like a TV transition, into the next image. So hence why it was being used to drive the head end of cable TV stations. And I looked at it and I thought, wow, this could be used for billboards. It could be used for reasons. Because the concept of it was, Tim, that you'd have a master control like you've got there. And effectively, through this bit of software, ultimately, when the internet pipe became big enough, you could broadcast content to a remote screen that had a PC in it and put screen-specific content to it.
Okay. So then this was like, and this is all happening in like the mid to... not 93-ish, 94-ish, somewhere in that range of time here we're talking?
Correct.
So that's like way ahead, isn't it? From
I was roughly
the industry.
About 20 years in front of everybody.
Yeah.
Wow. Both with the print, which obviously could be commoditized much quicker, but in terms of the screen technologies, automatically you would think that someone like Samsung, Sharp, Sanyo, these big guys would go, right, we should get into this.
Yeah.
But traditionally, what you find is they're like big oil tankers that take 10 years to just move 5 degrees.
Right.
And in that time, I could make hay and make the sunshine.
Mm-hmm. Because you're moving faster. You're a little more agile as a business.
Correct.
Less tape, yeah, less politics to deal with and so forth. So you could pump it. But the fact that you saw this, you had the foresight to say, this is going to be where this is going. You kind of mentioned it. You said, well, we can do some print in the interim, but this is where we're going to go. And if you stay with me, we're going to get you there. So yeah. did that company that you talked to about that, at least that one in particular, stay with you during that transition?
Every billboard company that I spoke to initially, they obviously liked the relationship we had built up with paper. So there was a degree of trust being built up over a period of time. And so for me then to say to them, look, guys, you know, that billboard that normally costs you, I'll quote UK figures here, £8,000 to produce, I'm now telling you to spend $500,000 on an LED screen.
Yeah.
But you'll be able to sell 500 times more on it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the concept, really.
Yeah. 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 And so, I think now, like, we all see it, you know, when you're out and about, even when I'm driving, you know, there's full screen billboards changing from one to another advertisement instead of just one set. One that's like on print. And then we've all been in malls and things where it's interactive kiosks that are lit. So you were kind of one of the pioneers seeing the future there, right? And trying to hunt down the technology to stay ahead.
Yeah. And that bit of software I found, you're going to like this. You're really going to love this. It had been written by some Scandinavian guys. And it came from the cruise line. So you're in your cruise ship,
yeah.
And in the broadcast room, they have the master control bit of software. And Tim, you're in cabin number 26, maybe with your wife, and you're celebrating an anniversary. So the message on the screen when you wake up in the morning is, hi, Tim, and your wife's name.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary from the captain.
Come on.
But get this, Tim, again, you'll like this. Every ship that was commissioned with that software, these guys who developed it, obviously it took a lot of expensive R&D to create it, but they got $1 million per ship for that bit of software.
Wow.
And but in the construction of a cruise ship, $1 million is a grain of sand.
I bet it is. I bet it's, so to add that in there.
In fact, I'll tell you a good story that before we move on that relates to that. I actually took it to P&O Cruise Lines in the UK, and they actually had to beg me to tell them it was the same software because they couldn't believe they could now buy it for £2,000 UK from me.
Come on.
Yeah.
So that huge price difference.
From the origin. So
wow.
Way, way back. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So when I started using it in a new market sector, there you go.
It just totally dropped in cost because of the time. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. So the fact though that you know, you had that disease and you probably thought, you know, or the diagnosis of it. And at the time, you were probably thinking, okay, I'm gonna play football and I'm gonna be part of Man U and I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So then where was the jump? I mean, how did you wrap your head around that's not happening? And then transition to the direction that you started going towards. I mean, that can be tough for a lot of people to realize one thing is dead and the other has to regenerate or get started.
Sure. I mentioned to you when we were off air earlier on that my father went to live in the USA when I was only 1 year old.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the ultimate driven guy. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sales was his life. And he built businesses up from zero. And that drive was always within me, okay? Mm. And particularly when I played football, I was always the captain of the teams, motivating and driving people on. And so I thought, I'll take that discipline into business, becoming the director of sales of the companies. I had a sales force to motivate, so like my team players.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did. I carried on that enthusiasm into companies, And I used to say to the guys in the sales office, look, you know, this is like 90-minute football game, but we're playing for 8 hours a day. Whistle doesn't go until 5 p.m.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. You got to have stamina.
Well, you know, and at the back of my mind, having had the diagnosis of FSH, you know, the consultant guy that I had was a great Irish guy. You know, the accent, we just had so much humor as I was growing up together. So he took the edge off it, if you like.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what the heck are you going on about there, Paul? Get out there, boy. Give it all you got. You know, loads of things. Yeah. I used to go for consultations and we just used to talk.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even analyze me, look at me or anything. We just talk about stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I think sometimes that's what you need. You need someone in your corner that is helping you kind of not just see the negative or concentrate on it, but what can you do now anyway?
If you've got a positive outlook, and again, I think when I talk to the people I speak to now with the consultants looking after me, I've got a lovely lady at the hospital in Suffolk here who's an FSH specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for example, now I've got a really excited about the whole Sanofi Miracule thing that you and I talked about. So she sees me as someone to get information from the US.
Yeah.
Which is great. But, you know, I've talked to her about the fact that way, way back then, I got no psych help. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and said, well, Paul, you just didn't need any.
Yeah. So, you were blessed with that. You, maybe a little bit of the DNA, right? You talk about your father's drive, passionate of what he was doing, and then you could easily convert it. But there are some people out there that kind of go, you know, the glasses is more empty than full, right? When they see that half glass, like, no, that's half empty. So
I've watched people who have had diagnosis of age, and they kind of think it's kind of over.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to basically prove to them that it can't be over.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to keep on keeping on and make it the best you can. You know, so like the exercise side of things, obviously I'd been conditioned to that being very, you know, from young, the training with soccer.
Yeah.
Taking that again into now what is a twice a week pool regime that I do on a Tuesday and a Thursday. Got a great local pool that I go to that's all got disabled facilities, a hoist that puts me in the disabled changing room by the pool, great people to support me and help me. And the consultants team devised this 30-minute regime that I do, which is all twisting, movement, running on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because you're weightless in the water, it feels fantastic. You can do it again.
Yeah.
You know, I get off that hoist and I walk through the pool. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, right? Oh, man. Yeah, I think, I've started a little bit of physical therapy in the pool. Hence, they're going to give me a lot of exercises and stuff to do on my own. I have the capabilities going to a gym locally that has a pool area that I can access it to. Yeah, you're going to have to send me that like workout routine.
Yep. It is so good. I mean, the weird thing for me is, Tim, both an exercise bike here in the bedroom that I go on as well sometimes. Like at the minute, the hoist at the pool is broken. So I've not been able to go in for nearly 4 weeks since Christmas. So it's bed exercises, you know, movements, and the bike for 10 minutes. But I go on a bike at quite high velocity movement, and I never get breathless. But if I walk out to the car with my four-wheel rollator that I've got here, do 100 yards, it's obviously with the weight of your body and the energy core and everything else that there's not sufficient resolve in there to keep you there for that 100 meters. So, whereas in the water, it's superb.
It is, and it's like you feel it like self-supporting. I remember the first time I went in there for the treatment, we were in there for an hour. When I came out of the water, it felt odd. Like my body felt like it was pooling out of itself. You know what I mean? Like I had support in certain areas of my body that I don't normally have. The water pressure supplied that. Then when I came out of it, it was like, whoa, it felt like I was just, you know, shedding out of my own skin. It was a very odd sensation.
What I had to do with the consultant is work out across that 7 days, how you could space it apart and what duration you could do so that you didn't like zap yourself completely.
Yeah.
But that you could optimize the effect. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, we got to Tuesday, Thursday. Mm-hmm. So there's a wider gap at the weekend, but it kind of works really good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I recommend a lot of people to try to work within that. If you can find a space for water, physical therapy, you know, on your own, whatever. Yeah, I totally agree. I think the pool is fantastic. Where are you then with your state of the disease, right? You talked about using a rollator and other equipment. Where is your body at with it now?
I got asymmetrical atrophy. Mm-hmm. So the left leg, the thigh's bad, but the calf is good.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that was from driving a manual car.
Okay.
Back in the UK. Yeah, now yeah. I have an automatic vehicle. And I always like now think, how the hell did I drive? No way would I have ever done it. Yeah. And then in the right side, I have atrophy in the calf, but a strong right thigh.
Hmm.
And the same upper body, left where the weakness came out in the shoulder, but strong on the right.
Strong on the right. Huh. Isn't that wild? So, how it kind of affects? Yeah.
You feel like you mentioned there when you came out of the water that sometimes you're a bit lopsided and odd sort of thing, but
yeah,
you get by.
Yeah. Hmm. So you're semi-retired now from the marketing world, even though I can still sense the energy is still there when you talk about it. You know, so I think you do probably some consulting, I'd imagine, still with that. But
yeah,
talk about now then, you've had a lot of hands in within music and DJing and being on the radio.
Sure.
I'm really interested in that part of your life. Okay. And career.
Well, great story. I mean, Pat, it's virtually coming full circle because as you know, I have a full radio set up here in the bedroom. So, and the amazing part for me is when I used to do it professionally, of course, I was broadcasting to an area of about 1.5 million people.
Mm.
So a big city in the UK. Now you sit at the desk here and you put the world map up on the screen and there's people in Venezuela listening to me.
Wow.
People in Australia, you know, people in the US, you know, a lot in the UK, which is just like mind blowing.
That is. Yeah.
From your bedroom, no car park, getting wet, nothing from your bedroom.
Yeah. That is wild.
So, but I tell you a good story way back, because commercial radio in the UK back in the late 70s was in its origin.
Mm-hmm.
So the station that I was on, which was called Piccadilly Radio, basically was the birthplace of a lot of guys who went on to National Radio 1, as it was then in the UK. So people like Chris Evans that people will know, Andy Peebles, and some guys who came from, I don't know if you know this about the radio history of the UK commercial radio. It, before Radio 1 in 67, that was legal as a national network, they used to have ships off the sea here in the North Sea, which were called pirate stations.
Huh.
Okay.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. You must look at some videos on YouTube, the history of pirate radio.
Huh.
There's some fantastic ones, and you'll see these guys going out on these tenders to the boats, these DJs.
That's wild.
So a big famous DJ couple for you in the UK, Tony Blackburn, who became quite big.
Yeah.
That one. Started off Chips, DLT, Dave Lee Travis, Roger Day, who became a friend of mine, he still is. You could mention a lot, Steve England. So some of the guys that I worked with on that first commercial station had come from those ships. Roger Day was one, he did the breakfast show, and Steve England, the guy I'm also friendly with now, he was the guy who was on there, but he also became Mr. Jingles UK. And you'll have heard of PAMS in the US.
Yeah.
The girl thing, you know, in Dallas.
Yes.
Yeah. He became their European agent.
Ah.
And so he's doing the jingles for all stations throughout the UK.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And now, if you want to make a note of this, you can listen to him maybe tomorrow morning, actually, if you get up early again. Atlantis Radio.
Okay. Okay.
Look at that. Atlantis Radio UK.
And that's Steve, where he's going to be on in the morning, Sunday morning.
Steve England is on between, I think, 10 and 1 p.m.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Wow. All right.
And you'll love the sound effects that he uses. He's given me quite a few to use on my show. But a funny story back there. So I used to go on at nighttime, okay? The origin then, everybody did kind of two jobs to save money. Mm-hmm. And I worked in the newsroom between 8:30 a.m. in the morning and 6 p.m. in the evening. I got a bit of sleep in the generator room. Okay.
Yeah.
And on air between 11 and 3 a.m. Okay.
Wow.
Now, initially, the station was only licensed to play music until 12 midnight. And then I had to play library music for the last 3 hours just to get used to operating the desk, look at your desk there now.
Yeah.
That is like 1/25th of how big it was. This was like Moonbase Alpha all around you. And it was all manual.
Oh my God. So
cart machines, for example, where the little carts, you put in the 8-track carts in the
mm-hmm,
slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You insert. Yeah.
Stickers on the back, and you had to read the stickers for the outwards on the commercial.
Oh my gosh.
To then play the next one and the next one, and then maybe a jingle, and then maybe hopefully you've queued a record up to go next.
Yeah, that is a lot more action happening, a lot more timing, paying attention. I mean, it's not all pre-done for you. Not like these quick pawn buttons that boom, 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 just hit and go.
There's a joke. You remember Monty Python?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Poor Yorkshireman sat there. Tell that the kids are today and they'd never believe you. And it's absolutely true.
It's the truth.
Yeah. So 3 hours, 4 hours of that was absolutely mind-numbing. So, I finished the show at 3 a.m. A bit more downtime in the generator room, then back to work again the next day. So I was composing the cartridges for the newsreaders from a national news feed.
Mm-hmm.
That was my daytime job.
That was your day job there, yeah.
Then nighttime was, you know, chance of a bit of fame. And one of those claim to fame was in that 3 hours that weren't licensed, I said to the program director, I said, oh, this is so dull, boring. Why can't we get local musicians in to get them some exposure?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get record deals or whatever else.
Right.
So I put a thing out on the air, you know, hey, if you're any good, send me a tape, in a cassette tape. Do you remember cassette tapes?
Yes. Yes, I do. Now they're throwbacks. They're coming back a little bit. Yeah.
Whatever, yeah. I got this deluge of CD of cassettes, and I put this one in the machine, and this guy played keyboards,
yeah.
And his name was Howard Jones.
Oh, man.
So I listen to this, and I think, wow, this is just amazing. I get him in. And then he's only about, 18, something like that. And he's a student, you know, at the Royal College of Music, Northern College of Music, studying keyboards. And I said, wow, this is fantastic. Will you play? But you put him in front of the Steinway, and this guy's off.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, he played live on the show for 3 months, and then he got a record deal.
Oh, okay. My gosh.
And then I never saw him after that. But then I see him like, you know, things can only get better.
Yeah, yes.
All these hits.
Huge hits.
Anyway, about 8 years ago, where I used to live in Buckinghamshire, I find out that his manager is based in the town close by to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I give him a call, and he said, hey, are you the guy off the radio? So I said, yeah. No way, he said, we've been trying to find you for 25 years.
Oh, my gosh.
This is going to be great.
Yeah.
And he's playing a small theater in a place called Milton Keynes, which is a big new town in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
A very sort of space-age town where all new technologies are tried out, even today. And so he's playing a small jazz club there called The Stables, doing a kind of anniversary tour. And he said to me, he said, oh, you can meet him afterwards as he comes out of the green room because he has to do a procedure before he starts. And I said, oh. And he said, you know then. So I said, he does chanting, doesn't he? to get in the zone.
Sure.
So anyway, out he comes at the end, and he looks at me, and I used to have quite a big black moustache back then. And he looked at me like this, and he kind of looked at my rollator, and then he went, put his hands like this, and he couldn't believe it. He said, it's you!
Yeah. So and he remembered. That is a huge find.
Yeah.
I mean, those that don't know, you know, go to your Spotify's and whatnot, you look up Howard Jones. You're talking albums after albums, hits. I mean, and it starts, so you were basically you discovered him, or you got, you know, you gave him.
I gave him the break,
platform. Basically. Yeah, I gave
him the break, and he just hugged me. He just loved it, but he was so sad about me having the role later in the FSA.
Yeah,
so sad.
Right.
But you know, he just said, "You still got the vigor. You still got the fun."
Yeah.
You know, things can only get better.
Yes. Well, there you go.
That's there what he go. Said.
That's good. That's good. I like that. That's enough.
But now radio full circle, as I say, from home in the bedroom, broadcasting on a small community station, which is the UK's most Easterby radio station. Big plug here. It's called East Point Radio, and you can tune in via eastpointradio.com.
There you go. There you go. Eastpointradio.com. Write it down.
Correct.
And check it out. What kind of music do you play on there?
Well, I do on Friday mornings live, Friday mornings UK, 11 a.m. till 12 noon. I do Sounds of the 70s.
Nice.
So, all those old 70s hits. And we've devised some wacky characters that are on there as well. So there's a guy who's a send-up of Tony Blackburn called Tony Blackout.
All right.
I can do quite a good impression of him.
Okay.
There's another guy called the Yoxman. Mm. Now the Yoxman is in a town called Yoxford, which is about 8 miles from where I live. Okay. And it's a stately home there. And the guy who's got it now, who's a property developer guy from London, has put a huge 70-foot statue in the grounds of this guy called the Yoxman.
Nice. And so you have him on?
It's me doing him.
Yeah. Doing the bit. I like it. I like that. Okay. I like that.
That kind of thing, yeah. Yeah. So there's that. And then on Sunday afternoons, UK, 1500 hours to 1600 hours, smooth jazz at the weekend.
Smooth jazz. I like that. Do you have to change your style, or are you the same kind of guy on each one?
I change completely, Tim. I'm off the wall with Sounds of the 70s, but
yeah,
smooth and in the groove for the weekend.
In the groove. I like it. You know, even when you say like the smooth jazz, you know, you're right. Like your tone has to change a little bit. Even when you say the word jazz, you know, you have to get a different resonance.
Well, I tell you, my love of that came about through being extremely lucky to be able to go on holiday most years to Naples in Florida in the U.S., and which is completely awash with smooth jazz everywhere. Where you go to markets, diners, it's just fantastic. So these ultra-smooth saxophonists, guitar players, pianists, and I thought, right, I've got to find out more about this. And as part of the FSH, something that happened, and I was pushing it with the business, I had a heart attack in 2003.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd really been pushing it then. I was driving 1,000 miles a week, you know, late hours, early starts.
Mm-hmm.
And I pushed it too hard and I had a heart attack. And I was immobilized for the best part of 3 months for that. But when I was in the hospital, a consultant there again had Dave Koz playing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's phenomenal. Yeah.
And I said, I recognize that. He said, what? Yeah. And I said, Dave Koz. Anyway, I've since got to meet Dave Koz.
Really?
When he played the UK, the Stables in Milton Keynes again.
Yeah.
I went to the green room and I met Dave Koz.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What an amazing opportunity. Yeah. That is great.
Another guy who's quite big in smooth jazz now, you know, Shack Attack. Bill Sharp, who's the pianist.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you listen to my show, you'll hear Bill Sharp say, this is Bill Sharp from Shack Attack playing here some more of our music with Paul on Smooth Jazz at the Weekend.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Don't ever lose that one. That's a nice bite to put in there. That's perfect.
Yeah. Wow. So just wonderful. And I find that music, this is the heart guy again, said to me, it's the most rhythmic, easy flow music to make you feel chilled. And for someone with FSH, this is what you need.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be chill. Yeah. 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 I like to use, steal it because I coach baseball and there's a baseball coach that I steal a lot of stuff from. He says, you know, you got to be suave. You got to be smooth. You got to be easy. Same with FSHD. Yeah. Try to be in it. Yeah, because we can see the story of your life as you've told the parts to us, which has been incredible. We've heard the ups and downs, you know, but you always seem to find a way, Paul, to kind of smooth it out, don't you?
Honestly, big part of me moving here to Suffolk 5 years ago. This is like England was 30 years ago. The pace is non-existent.
Yeah.
Because it's country lanes, everybody drives at 30 miles an hour. And nobody's doing it 50, 60, 80. Yeah. And that in itself just slows your life down.
Slows it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice and easy. That,
with a bit of Norman Brown on the guitar.
Oh, there you go. You get a little tea in the afternoon. I mean, come on.
There you go. You've got it. This is the new lifestyle.
Yeah. And to me, I think, you know, there is a sense as at least as I get older, like that's what I'm looking for. You know, you do the hustle bustle, even you, Paul, you've done the hustle bustle, you've done the heavy marketing, getting people involved, you know, putting those tools into play and into action fast, hard, quick, you know, making those, but at some point you got to kind of quiet the noise, quiet the pace and just do what you love, which is the radio, it seems. Still maybe dabbling a little bit in the marketing. I mean,
full circle. Easy.
Full circle. Yeah. Full
circle. Yeah. That's
amazing.
I'm looking at you there now. Mm. Radio is not difficult to do with FSH.
No, you can sit. Yes.
So you never know. Ultimately, I may go into it and get paid for it again. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
And treat it more like a hobby now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think when you do that and you take the pressure off of it and you just kind of let it flow, it's even easier then if you needed to find it as some type of income source because the pressure's off.
You know, that the ironic part for me is I told you about that radio station back in the early days. So it's a big, big thing because commercial radio hadn't been heard before. Yeah. And so it became mass audience. You know, so you went on there and you had to concentrate and it was a big deal.
Pressure.
You go on here now and you do it and you think, well, you're broadcasting to the world and you just don't care. It's great. You have fun.
Yeah, exactly. You just make it for what it should be. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah,
and this has been an amazing conversation and a journey. You feel like an old friend. It we just kind of clicked right into it and man, this is good.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see a lot of me in you.
Oh, boy. I just need the cool accent, but I can't pull it off now.
Well, you'll have to, you know, you can have elocution, dear boy.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, then that's my homework assignment to you. I would love to have your pool workout, what you're doing.
Yeah.
More tips and things to help improve my radio world would be awesome. I would love the input on that. So, make sure you and I stay connected that way for sure. But I was looking forward to having this interview and I was glad we finally got it locked in because I knew there was going to be a lot of common things in there, a lot of things to talk about, a lot of fun subjects to touch on, not just FSHD and the struggles of that. But so the last question I got for you, Paul, is, you know, what's that, even though you've kind of sprinkled in a little bit of it throughout your life story that you've given us today, but what's kind of that thing that you would tell that person that's maybe being diagnosed, maybe they were just diagnosed this week. You know, we have to deal with that grieving process of it, accepting what it is. But what's your kind of, if you looked right into them and say, hey,
okay, my future head on again.
Yeah.
So it was 20 years ahead in business, if you like. Yeah. So let's say we're going to be 20 years ahead in FSH. So that person gets that diagnosis now. Mm-hmm. You and I know, don't we, about this latest Sanofi miracle potential. I now use the word cure because I think that's the bit of unknown. From what I read into it, it's kind of a thing that could stop the progression.
Mm.
So that person that gets the diagnosis early, if they're a teenager,
yeah,
maybe they just don't get any worse than they are.
Yeah.
And for them, I think I say to you, you are so, so lucky if that happens.
Yeah.
In the next 5 years.
Because at least that there's the future is a little brighter than it was when I got diagnosed or when you got diagnosed, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think someone like Anthony at Miracule, who is a sufferer as well, I gather. Mm-hmm. I go, hats off, Anthony. You were very forward thinking as well. For somebody who has the condition to set a biotech company up to go, I'm going to get into this if I can, I think it's just miracle stuff.
Yeah. Probably hence why they say it. Yeah. That's a great marketing tool, right? Yeah.
Well, you know me with marketing. So,
yes.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Always well, spot the key.
You have an eye for it. You have an ear for it. There's no question. Yeah.
There we go.
Well,
one thing I didn't mention was the whole McDonald's thing we talked about a bit earlier,
Yes,
audience, I think that's pretty good. But I had a massive privilege to be able to meet the guy who invented the menu board for McDonald's 40, 50 years ago.
So you're saying the board that people see now?
Yeah.
You're a part of that?
Whole thing, yeah. Yeah. So this was, again, about 96, I think it was.
Yeah.
And they asked me to go over to Chicago. And I met this guy who was his company with a sales promotion agency for McDonald's. And then next door was Leo Burnett, which was the above-the-line agency, looking after him on Wacker Drive. And effectively, he'd been tasked by the board of McDonald's to bring the menu board into the 21st century. Mm. And he'd worked with one of America's biggest back projection manufacturers to create a back projection unit that could go 3 meters wide. Okay. And then be scaled down for the different sizes of restaurants.
Okay.
I knew ultimately that because bulbs in projection have a limited lifespan. Mm. So the maintenance on that product would be quite extensive. It would ultimately become fine pitch LED. Mm. So now you have LED manufactured all over the world. In America, a big company is called Daktronics. And they can manufacture 1.4 millimeter pitch LED screens.
Jeez.
Okay. So from the professional market that we're looking at now out in the street, those screens are going to get like the resolution of your phone.
Wow.
You won't see any dots anymore.
No more. Yeah. Clear.
But the big movement in it will be that your lounge in your house, a full wall will become an LED screen.
That's coming, you're saying?
That's coming now. That's the next part of it, yeah.
Wow.
So your whole experience with the TV, the internet TV, becomes immersive.
Yeah.
And don't forget, then your emails become 80 feet tall.
That's disturbing.
So we don't need the glasses anymore, Tim. That's the thing. So that's going to happen. That will happen.
But then your involvement, though, with McDonald's and to what it is now, because I remember, you know, way back it was like back projection. Some of the pictures were kind of lit, you know, backlit a little bit. They'd have to manually change it out. We've been putting in the little letters and stuff. I remember seeing some workers way back, even doing that, changing the prices manually and so forth. But now it's all, you know, digital. The boards just, you know, flip over from, you know, one meal set of breakfast, lunch, etc. So you're saying that you were part of that pioneer project.
I was indeed
shifting to that.
Yeah, I was indeed. That agency set up a dedicated digital unit.
Yeah.
And they got me into the store psychology group at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And this was amazing because it was four guys whose whole raison d'etre was to be in your mind about making you want McDonald's more, whether it was a drive-through, in-town store, or, you know, a diner, whatever else.
Yeah.
All the different ones. And they talked about the 7-second journey from the door to the counter and how it could make you buy up.
Huh.
So you had burgers that were 3 meters wide.
Sure.
And it had changed to four individual pictures.
Yeah.
And then complete sea of McFlurry with huge pieces of chocolate in 3 meters.
Oh, yeah. That gets the kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So all your emotions just become alive in there and you want it. And then you know, going down the line, I used to say to them, your drive-throughs are all going to be big touchscreens, or even not even touch now with COVID motion.
Mm.
Just gesture at it.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
And that is the truth. You can see the evolution of it. I saw a advertisement commercial, something like that, more or less, or a news story, if you will, of how there's a McDonald's that they're prototyping to be completely, you know, no employees at the window. It's you either pre-do it on your phone, or you show up there with, the motion screens, and it just comes out on like a conveyor belt. There's people working, they're making the food or dealing with issues, but the main point of contact is just you and the screen.
Automation. Yeah.
Automation. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's so faster, quicker, et cetera.
The restaurants are just cooking stuff basically. And
say
the automation does the customer interface.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, you know, I used to talk to people. I was just looking for my phone, actually. That, you know, I used to forecast what people would be like with phones.
Yeah.
And looking at me like I was some sort of guy from Mars, you know. I said, be banging into, you know, lampposts because they're walking along looking at phone. No way. Now you see it.
Absolutely. You see it all the time. You can go to YouTube right now and someone probably made a gag reel about people falling off, you know, curbsides and stuff, doing things they shouldn't be because they're looking at their phone.
And there's a whole sort of behavior around people who are on the phone, who they do these strange like walkarounds, or they move legs and dance or whatever while they're taking a call.
Yes.
You know, so it becomes a whole thing itself.
Yeah. It's become a necessity. You have to have it. You know, well,
you ask any 18-year-old now if they do without being online, and they go, I can't be.
Yeah. How did you guys do it? What did you do? I get that question from my kids. Yeah. What did you do on the internet?
If you say, I used to send a letter to someone.
I sat down with pen and paper and I wrote and I folded it up.
And then, I got a great answer from one kid. He said, how did you know it got there?
Swag. Yeah.
It didn't get a bounce back.
Yeah. That's wild. That's wild. Oh my gosh.
So McDonald's has now gone on to become what it's become. And there you go. Yeah,
you're a part of it. So then we're either happy for you with that, Paul, or we're mad at you.
Well, you know, in the origin, again, lots of people used to put like animations of people being afraid of screens and going, no, get away from me. You and I are staring at a screen and staring at each other. So when your lounge becomes that immersive experience, you know, and you're watching a soccer game and the guys are the same size as you.
Yeah.
You want to jump on the field and help them.
Right. Yeah, well, you better take it easy. I mean, I'm sure mentally you have the skills still, but your body might not want to cooperate.
No, that's it. That's the difference now. Afternoon teas for me, Tim.
Oh, man. This was awesome. Thanks, Paul, for spending the time with us. You were phenomenal, and we will stay connected. I'm glad that we have this connection.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
That is Paul Ronson from the UK out there. Yeah, he's from the other side of the world. Thank you very much. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we'll close up shop, tell you what's going on in the FSHD Society world. Take care. This is FSHD Society Radio Show. The FSHD Radio Podcast is brought to you by Fulcrum Therapeutics. Fulcrum Therapeutics is a proud sponsor of the FSHD Radio Podcast. The team at Fulcrum is working to develop innovative therapies targeting the root causes of genetic diseases, including FSHD. As the only company with a drug in clinical stage development for FSHD, Fulcrum is proud to support programs that are helping more people learn about FSHD and the critical need for research that can lead to new treatments. For information and updates about Fulcrum, visit their website at fulcrumtx.com. You can also connect with them on LinkedIn or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I had to play this. This is FSHD Society Radio Show. This is Howard Jones. So that is a little tribute there to our guest that we just had on, Paul Ronson, who helped discover Howard Jones. And we all know that song. Things can only get better. Are you serious right now? I mean, that's exactly, this is amazing right here. So Paul Ronson, working radio, gets a stack or a big pile of cassettes, and that is the artist he finds, right? Amazing. Amazing stories we had with Paul Ronson. I had to play that. So that's one of my favorite songs from that era for sure. It's on my 80s playlist, and it should be on yours as well. And now there's a little bit of backstory for it. So it was a casual, fun conversation for me. So selfishly, I hope you locked into all of it, because there was a lot of things that I definitely wanted to cover as we were talking in the aspects of marketing and radio work. And just a great character is what Paul is to me. And I think he's got amazing charisma and style. And I'm going to check out more of his show. I did listen to it several times before I had him on, kind of my show research, so to speak. And, I guess I like all sorts of music. I can lean into the jazz and into the 70s music for sure. It kind of gets your brain firing, in just different moods, different feelings. And his show's a lot of fun. He talked about the characters that he kind of puts into it too, changes himself a little bit from one show to the next. It's interesting. But evolving is, to me, what FSHD is. You have to deal with what this is, cope with as it changes. And for some, it's easier. For some, it's not. I get that. For Paul, I think he comes across that it's easy, but it's not. It is hard. And he just has this, what other choice do you have? You have to move forward. And that's really, to me, is what this has always been about, and what I love his message within it. So really appreciate you guys being in here in this episode and kind of having some fun with me with him, and just really enjoying the time that we had together, and kind of eavesdropped in. I mean, I could probably talk to Paul for hours, and hopefully I get that opportunity coming up, because there's just so many things that we could chat about. So I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. But the other areas or communities or groups, obviously the FSHD radio here is one great thing that we love to do, but there's also other great groups. Women on Wellness is a great group to be a part of. The Wellness Hour, Feeling Fit with FSHD. There are so many things to find. There's even, of course, your chapter meetings throughout the country, and now sprawling more into Canada. The Care Partner Hour is also a great resource. So there's a lot of things to dial into and to find to help in your support journey, as well as, those special type things that happen through the FSHD Society, like FSHD 360 and so forth. There's so many great outreach programs and community groups you can be a part of. So I really implore you to go to fshdsociety.org to kind of be a part of that, and find something that kind of works for you. I'm always here for you. I want you all to know that I'm not just here as this platform or podcast, as maybe some others where they can only kind of be reached that way, or they're only going to talk about what's on the show, or only about the science. I like to talk about the people. I like to get involved with the community and those that struggle with this disease. I understand the science, DUX4 and so forth. Great. We have to know about that and know what treatments and maybe a plan is coming. But all said and done, it's about the people. It's about the community. And I like to be, hopefully, in the middle of all that, connecting with all of you. So feel free to reach out to me. You can do that through the show, at fshdsociety.org. So until next time, be well, take care of each other. And thanks for listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show.